Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, how's everybody doing? Shut her up, bro! Man, the clock on BTR is fucking fucked up beyond belief. It said I had an hour left until show, a minute before show, and then now that I'm on air, it says the show is 2 hours and 30 minutes. Sorry, that will not be the case. It'll be the normal time. A lot of great stuff to talk about today. We had an amazing story break over the weekend. I call it an amazing story because, you know, it is an amazing story on the one hand, but on the other hand, I actually filed a story under www.noshit.com. Of course, talking about the Panama Papers, as it's being referred to. So I'm going to give you all the details about that. In fact, I'm going to kick it off with that in a second here. Then also, a little surprise in terms of Bernie Sanders. I mean, you want to talk about good news. I don't want to ruin it now, but, man, randomly picking off the most random state in human history. We'll discuss that. And, Jesus, so I'm mixing it up big time after that. We got an anti-Muslim hate group planned a protest, and then there were armed Muslims that showed up and were like, yeah, how about no? Then we have weird sex scandals, which I've been trying to get to for a long time, but I haven't had the time to get to. Donald Trump does an interview with the Washington Post, and man, he makes a claim that's one of his most ridiculous claims yet, because it's basically impossible for him to do what he's promising to do here. Like all the other times, usually when we discuss Donald Trump, I'm talking about some insane thing he said that's just a horrible policy. This is him promising something that's pretty much impossible. So I'll be spending quite a bit of time on that and much more. So there's a lot to get to. Let's get started. And we'll do it with the thing that I've gotten so many tweets over that it actually made me want to respond and tell everybody to shut the fuck up. The Panama Papers. Let's do it. We had an amazing story break over the weekend called the Panama Papers. It's one of the largest leaks in history. In fact, it actually is the largest leak in history. So let me lay this out for you here. The Guardian reports the following. The hidden wealth of some of the world's most prominent leaders, politicians, and celebrities has been revealed by an unprecedented leak of millions of documents that show the myriad ways offshore tax regimes. All right, so let me pause here for a second and tell you guys, this is a gigantic story simply by nature of the fact that it's the largest leak in history. But at the same time, I really do file this under www.noshit.com. So I'm going to give you all the information here, and then I'm going to come back and tell you some facts that we already know that I think are even more mind-boggling than the Pentagon Papers, or Pentagon Papers, that was from back in the day, the Panama Papers themselves. So they continue here. Journalists from more than 80 countries have been reviewing 11.5 million files leaked from the database of Mossack Fonseca, which is the world's fourth biggest offshore law firm. The records were obtained from an anonymous source by the German newspaper SZ and shared by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists with The Guardian and the BBC. So here's exactly what they revealed. 12 national leaders are among 143 politicians, their families, and close associates from around the world known to have been using offshore tax havens. A $2 billion trail leads all the way to Vladimir Putin. Among national leaders with offshore wealth are Nawaz Sharif, Pakistan's prime minister, Iyad Alawi, ex-interim prime minister and former vice president of Iraq, Petro Poroshenko, president of Ukraine, Alaa Mubarak, the son of Egypt's former president slash dictator, and the prime minister of Iceland. Six members of the House of Lords, three former conservative MPs, and dozens of donors to UK political parties have had offshore assets. The families of at least eight current and former members of China's supreme ruling body, the Politburo, have been found to have hidden wealth offshore. A key member of FIFA's powerful ethics committee, irony, which is supposed to be spearheading reform at world football's scandal-hit governing body, acted as a lawyer for individuals and companies recently charged with bribery and corruption. One leaked memorandum from a partner of Mossack Fonseca said, 95% of our work coincidentally consists in selling vehicles to avoid taxes. 214,000 shell companies are involved. All right, so let me try to break this down in even simpler terms. The way this works is you have prominent politicians, you have prominent business leaders, even celebrities and athletes, they say, that get in contact with this company, the company whose name I've now butchered twice, Mossack Fonseca, something like that, unimportant. But what they do is they contact that company, and that company says, oh, yes, we will go ahead and set up a company for you overseas, and this is our job to set up a company for you overseas. Fear not, we will set up a director of that company. It will be under a name that's totally unrelated to you and will in no way be traceable to you. And what you're able to do after that is basically take your money, hide it offshores, and pay no taxes. So 214,000 shell companies they set up. What that means is 214,000 of the world's richest people, most elite people, have said, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya, got no interest in this social contract thing, no interest in this government accountability thing, no interest in paying any taxes whatsoever. So I'm going to go ahead and let all the teachers and the accountants and the construction workers and the suckers pay their taxes. I'm going to put all mine overseas, and I'm not going to pay Dickie McGeezax. That's what this leak is about. Now, at the beginning of the story, I told you guys I do file this under www.noshit.com, even though it's one of the biggest leaks in history, and it's a huge story, because, elites exploiting the system? No! You don't say. Now, one thing is interesting in this report, though, which is, they've named nobody from the U.S., but I revert back to one of the points that was in my layout here for you. They say that this company, which I will now butcher a fourth or fifth time, Mossack Fonseca, they say it's the, quote, wonder what's going on at the top three. You think there aren't U.S. senators in there? You think there aren't U.S. business leaders? You think there aren't perhaps people in the executive branch? Of course there are. The U.S. is not perfect. The U.S. is not incorruptible. They play ball just like anybody else. In fact, they probably lead when it comes to playing ball on stuff like this. So there you have it, a gigantic leak. We now know it's not just theory. It's not just, hey, I have a suspicion. Hey, it's a gut thing. Hey, there's other evidence that points this in this direction. No, now we have proof, rock-solid proof. Yes, there is a club of elites. There is a club of business leaders and celebrities and athletes and world governments and people within those governments that think they're above the law, and they act above the law. And it's a common thing. Once you get in that club, hey, let me contact you with a firm that will set up another firm or business for you overseas, which can make it so that you don't have to pay any taxes whatsoever. Now, the two most important facts here, which we knew before we even got these leaks, there's one address in the Cayman Islands that has 18,000 businesses registered to it. How amazing is that? Rubbing the corruption and the tax dodging in your face. They're saying, no, yeah, this is, it's, we've built it into the system. If you're rich enough, yeah, you get away with whatever the fuck you want to get away with. 18,000 businesses registered to one address in the Cayman Islands. And how big overall is the tax dodging industry worldwide? I hope you're sitting down. $20 trillion tax dodging is a $20 trillion industry. Now, again, think about it. If you're a construction worker, a teacher, an accountant, just a regular person working a regular job, you have a 9-to-5 and you got to feed your kids and pay the rent and all that stuff. If you don't pay your taxes, it's called tax evasion or tax dodging, and you go to jail. It's one of the elites that dodges their taxes. They're not doing tax evasion. They're not tax dodging. They're using a tax haven. And it's, I forget which comedian said it, but there was somebody who made a great point. They're like, doesn't that even sound much better than if somebody's doing tax evasion? It's like tax haven. My money's going to get a tan in the Cayman Islands or in the Bahamas. So they do it, and they get away with it, and then they get what's called tax holidays, which is, all right, we got to bring more revenue back into the United States, and perhaps we can get it from these rich people who've been not paying their taxes all along. That's a wacky idea. So let's go ahead and make them bring their money back into the country, but instead of having to pay the original tax rate, which they would have had to pay if the money was here, we'll give them a break, we'll cut it by, 70%, and then let them bring it back in here. Is that how it works with you? Hey, I didn't pay my taxes for 8 years. You think they're going to come by and be like, all right, now let's negotiate? No, they're going to lock your punk ass up. There are two different sets of laws, two different sets of rules. If you're rich, if you're elite, more importantly, if you're part of the donor class worldwide, you can basically do whatever the fuck you want. If you're a regular person, you better follow the damn rules. But now we blew the lid off the whole thing, and we know there is stuff going on. It is funky stuff behind the scenes, and it is deeply corrupt. Okay. There you go, baby. There you go. I do have to say, though, so The Guardian had the best article on this, I think. But some of the different outlets that wrote stuff about this, wrote articles about this, they just stopped. They write horrendous articles. Like, even the website itself, the Panama Papers website, they take forever to make their point. It's like, make your point. And finally, they'll throw in some numbers. And it's, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. But that's a problem, I think, in journalism. Now, again, this is what you'll find is print outlets actually do fantastic journalism. And that's what we have here. But if you talk about TV news, forget it. They're totally hopeless. They're just ridiculous. They suck in every imaginable way. That's the whole point of them. But perhaps you had some print outlets here forcing people to do the right thing. But my point is I don't know what it is. The wording of some print outlets just gets under my skin. There's this old-fashioned way of writing. Oftentimes you see it in the Washington Post or the New York Times. They have this old-fashioned way of writing where it's like they take forever to say what they're trying to fucking say. It's like, why didn't you just say it? Say it in a sentence. And by the way, this is another reason why I think new media is rising and old media is dying off, is because the new breed of, news consumer, I think, is more along the lines of the way I think and the way I feel, which is you just want to know what the fuck they're trying to say. You don't want to get through a whole bunch of flowery rhetoric and nonsense, and 8 paragraphs in, you finally get a clue of what the fuck you're reading about. All right, sorry. I always... I can't help myself. On a Monday, I do some side tangents, okay? Especially since we've been off air since Thursday. And thanks, everybody, for wishing me a happy 300,000 subscribers. Couldn't have done it without you. If it wasn't for you, I'd have zero. So, all right. Let's go to some good news. All the Bernie Sanders peeps. Which, keep it real, is over 90% of my audience. Over the weekend, we learned that Bernie Sanders actually won the Nevada caucus. This is so random, I didn't believe it at first. I was getting tweets, people said, oh, Bernie won Nevada. I'm like, the fuck does that even mean? When you see what happened on the caucus day, I think Hillary won by 4 points or 5 points or something like that. Like, it wasn't even just a small victory. It was a pretty decent-sized victory. So I'm reading it. I'm like, what? No, that's not true. And then, lo and behold, I go do some research because that's what this whole fucking show is based on, and it kind of is true. So apparently the rules of the Nevada caucus are absolutely ridiculous. You have the caucus itself as one of the early states in the election, because as I'm sure all you remember, it did happen a while ago. And then delegates can end up switching sides. So you have the caucus itself, but then you have, over this past weekend, we had a state convention slash caucus where the people who were the delegates got together and they had their own caucus. So Bernie's side was more passionate and more organized on the ground, and he ended up winning the state overall and netting anywhere from 2 delegates to 4 delegates, depending on which source you read. He even flipped Clark County. Clark County, of course, is the county where Las Vegas is, so it's the largest number of people by a long shot. And he ended up winning. Now, on the one hand, look, it's obvious. Everybody knows who I favor in this election. It's no secret. It oozes out of every fucking segment I do on the topic, based on the facts, I think, not just my opinion. But, of course, my opinion as well leans in that direction. So it's a positive thing in the sense that Bernie Sanders ended up being the victor. We got to keep it real, and we got to call it what it is, man. Caucuses need to go away. They need to go away. They need to die. They're stupid. They're the dumbest fucking things I've ever seen in my life. The whole concept behind them is ridiculous. You get a bunch of people in a room, and at least in theory, everybody's supposed to, hey, I'm going to caucus for my candidate, and they argue and they explain why I think my candidate is the best, and there's other people that make the counter-arguments. Now, we had some TYT reporters actually on the ground at one of these caucus sites. I think it was in Nevada. Jimmy Dore was there, and Jordan Sheridan was there, and they were describing how the way even a caucus is supposed to work in theory, it didn't work out like that. You just had people in there raise their hand and say, oh, yeah, I'm for this candidate, and other people would be for the other candidate. You count it up, and then you have somebody who's picked to be the person that represents them to show up at this convention thingy. And many of Hillary's delegates didn't even fucking show up, which means they weren't that passionate about her or they didn't care. So here's a wacky idea. Why not just do this thing called an election, a primary, where you just, oh, I'm going to go and vote for this person. And then whoever has the most votes wins. How's that for crazy? So in this case, yeah, everybody on the Bernie side is going to be happy because Bernie won. But from a procedural standpoint, I do think this is a disaster. Because imagine the situation was reversed. Imagine it's a state where Bernie Sanders won, and then after the fact, at some goofy convention, they're like, actually, no, Hillary won. Bernie people would be like, revolution! Well, we already say political revolution. But they'd be like, literal revolution! Blah! They're overthrowing. Yeah, that would be bullshit. And it's bullshit when it works against Hillary, too. Got to keep it real. Got to call it what it is. So, and I don't know. If there was an actual primary where people just went in and voted, maybe Bernie would have won that way, too. I don't know. But the point is, that's how it should be. And while I'm in the middle of this rant where we're talking about electoral politics, while we're at it, get rid of the fucking Electoral College. Okay? You get rid of the Senate while we're at it. Really, Nebraska gets 2 senators, and California, which has a population of 17 trillion, gets 2 as well? So, oh, we'll overrepresent Nebraska, and that's fair, because Nebraska has less people. How would that be fair? If it has less people, it has less people. Oh, but the way the founders set it up at the time, you want to have the small conservative states have as much say as the liberal states. Even if there's more liberal people in the country, you want the conservatives to override the will of the liberals and then get what they want. Or not. Or not. If we don't go to that system, what's Nebraska going to do? I'm going to secede. You sure about that, fella? Nebraska? You think your economy's going to be thriving and everybody's going to be just hunky-dory if you pull out and the 17 people in your state can work with your industries of making bale of hay and Pop-Tarts? It's not going to work. It's not going to work. So I got an idea. Let's do straight popular vote. And get rid of the Electoral College and actually have primaries in each state, no stupid caucuses. And if we had a system where it was just popular vote, what would have happened in American history again? Oh, yeah, we never would have had George W. Bush. People don't remember this. Al Gore won the popular vote. He won the popular vote by at least 500,000 votes. So the guy who won by 500,000 votes did not end up becoming the president. How can anybody say that system is democratic? That system is literally the opposite of democratic. It would be undemocratic. We pick this guy. That's nice. We're going with that guy. What? What is that? What is that? So, yes, everybody in the Bernie team is going to be happy, and I understand because I like Bernie, too. It's my candidate. So, everybody's happy because of this. But the way he won in Nevada is bullshit, okay? We shouldn't even have caucuses in the first place. But if you went by the original results of the caucus, yeah, it was going to be Hillary who won. Get rid of all the caucuses. Do a straight popular vote everywhere. Get rid of the Electoral College. Let's be adults now. Okay, and then I don't buy the arguments of, well, there's so many more liberal people in the country, so we got to balance it out by giving the conservatives more power and balancing it out. Or we just go by what the majority wants. Again, if it's a constitutional issue, that's off the table. The whole point of the Constitution is those things are rights. They're concrete. They're set in stone. You can't have the will of the majority override the rights of the minority. So a Constitution, all the rights in that, off the table. But everything else should be open to democratic opinion. And if you disagree with that, you're quite literally just undemocratic. So you pick what side you want to be on. Okay. Doodle-doo-loo. All right, let's do – I don't have time to do this Donald Trump one because I want to spend some time on that one before we take our first break here. So what can I squeeze in? What story here? Jesus, I have a bunch of stories I want to take time on. This is kind of annoying me now. Find me something. Find me something, bitch. I'm trying. All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the Seek story. Okay. Okay, let's do it. Military decision that was just handed down regarding religion. Huffington Post reports here. A Sikh army captain who sued the U.S. military for discrimination in March has won the right to continue serving on active duty while upholding his religiously mandated turban and beard. The U.S. Army released its decision on Thursday to grant Captain Simratpal Singh religious accommodation to the rules against facial hair and headwear, adding that the Army intends to gather information to develop uniform standards for religious accommodations. Okay, so what's interesting here is I think that on this case you have the political spectrum flip, where you have the liberals who would normally take the position that I would agree with all of a sudden are taking what I think is the more conservative position, and the conservatives are taking what's actually the more liberal position. So in other words, you have liberals looking at this guy, and because he's Sikh, because he's a minority and it's a minority religion, they say, well, this is discrimination because he is a minority and this is, you know, our culture saying our culture is better than their culture. And why would you say that, bro? Their culture is just as good as our culture. So why not just let him wear whatever he wants to wear, bro? Stop being a fascist, bro. That's the position that they've taken. But imagine the situation was reversed and it was a Christian person who was like, I'm deeply religious. I'm in the military, but I'd want to wear my priest outfit, if it's a Catholic. I want to wear my priest thing while I'm there, while I'm fighting. Now what position would the liberals take? They wouldn't be like, what do you mean, bro? He just wants to, why are you saying your coach is better, bro? Let him wear whatever he wants to wear, bro. This isn't a big deal. It's just, it's freedom to wear what you want to wear. No, we'd say, the fuck are you talking about? You're in the military. You want to override the rules of the military to wear some goofy outfit based on your made-up religion? No! How about that? So here's, again, where I fall on this is, this isn't, people might try to spin it in their minds as we're just treating them equally if they want to wear what they want to wear. No. This isn't giving religious people equal rights. It's giving them special rights. When you say, hey, as long as you say this is in the name of religion, you can do things that other people aren't allowed to do, what you're actually doing is you're being discriminatory against secular people. You are, because if you want to allow religious people to wear whatever they want to wear because religion, which is what the argument comes down to, okay, then you have to allow non-religious people the same rights. And if you don't, you are discriminating against non-religious people. So they say, the rules against this guy, they were rules against your own headwear and rules against facial hair in the military. So he says, no, I want to wear my facial hair the way I want to wear it, and I want to have my headgear because it's my religion, so this is what I want to do. So, all right, if you want to allow that, that's fine. But then you also have to say, if you're secular and you want to wear facial hair, you can wear facial hair too. What if you just like your facial hair? You can't say no. You have to say this is for a religion in order to do it. You know, what if there's somebody, and I'm not being facetious here, I'm being dead serious. If there's somebody who says, look, I'm not a religious person, but I always wear this hat, I always wear this headgear, and it's been my thing my whole life. It's my lucky hat. I've worn it since I was in eighth grade. I want to keep wearing it. But the military would say to that person, you're not allowed. But you, who just said I'm doing it because of my religion, you're allowed. Guys, I brought this up before, but there's when I used to work at a car dealership, there was somebody who said, they went to management and said, I don't work Saturdays. Now, Saturdays, for those of you who don't know, is the biggest day in the car business. That's when most people come in to buy their cars on a Saturday for understandable reasons. It's their weekend, and they'd say, okay, this is the day I can do it. So the guy said, I don't work Saturdays. It's my religion. I go to a church all day or whatever religion it was, whatever, you know, things we do all day on Saturday, but that's what we do. So, you know, you have to make accommodations for me because it's my religion. Now, when I was working at a car dealership, I know this may surprise some of you, but when I'm not doing something that I really, really want to do, I'm a lazy fuck. So I didn't really want to be working at a car dealership, so I wanted more time off. So if I had gone to management and said, hey, look, I don't want to work Saturdays. Well, why don't you want to work Saturdays? I get worn out from the week while we're here the entire week. I don't feel like working Saturday because I'm tired and I need to recharge my batteries, and I honestly want to watch Netflix all day. What would their response be to me? They would laugh me out of the fucking room. You want a day off because you're tired and you don't want to keep working. How stupid. I'm going to force you to come here and work. But if I had gone up and said, I'm doing it because religion, because space fairies and fucking, you know, mythological things, Harry Potter, Narnia. Oh, well, then you can go ahead and miss. How is that not the most obvious discrimination against secular people ever? You're not giving equal rights to religion. You're giving special rights to religion. You get to do whatever you want. As long as you say the magic word religion, you get to do whatever you want. And you say, well, Kyle, come on, they're just talking about putting on headgear and growing a beard here. It's not that big a deal. But it's not just this. We've seen what happened at the Supreme Court with Hobby Lobby. They say, hey, because I'm religious and I'm the business owner, I want to stop my worker from taking birth control through the health insurance plan. They said, yeah, go ahead. You get to control her health decisions because she works for you. That's religious fascism. I disagree with it. You work for me. Now I will force you to abide by my moral code. Where does that end? I'm against vaccines. You can't vaccinate your fucking kid. This is the path we're going down. So you can get away with anything as long as you say religion. As long as you say religion, I can get away with anything. And the sad thing is that oftentimes when it comes to Islam or when it comes to, apparently in this case, we're dealing with a Sikh here, when it comes to people who are minorities who are genuinely discriminated against in many respects, they then are now co-opting the left, where the left will argue for them in instances where they shouldn't argue with them because they haven't argue for them because they haven't done the basic intellectual exercise of imagine it was a Christian. That's all you got to do is just imagine. So again, imagine that this guy who's a Sikh who says, "What do you mean, man? This is just me abiding by my religion." I mean, you're not a bigot, are you? You're against me doing what I want because of my religion? Well, again, imagine it was a Christian person who's like, can't serve in any unit with gay people. You'd be like, fuck off, I don't care about your religion. You got to abide by the same rules as everybody else, that's equality. Or they said, I just want to wear my priest outfit as I'm out in the fucking field fighting. You'd say, what the fuck are you talking about? Just abide by the same rules as everybody else. So you either have to do that, or the other option is, allow, at this point, because you're allowing this guy whatever facial hair he wants and whatever headgear he wants because of his religion, you have to say to be consistent, I will now allow anybody to have facial hair again because I just allowed this guy to have facial hair. So equality is anybody could have facial hair and anybody could have headgear. That's it. So you want to be consistent. Either you say, no, you know, the rules are the rules. Nobody has facial hair. Nobody has headgear. That's it. I'm not making any special accommodations for religion or anything else. Or you say, now everybody can wear facial hair. Everybody can wear headgear. But the path that they carved out is the worst possible path. I'm only going to allow you to do certain things because you said the magic word, which is religion. So Now we have to shut up and not be rational anymore, not use our minds, because you said the magic words. I don't fucking play that game. I don't play that game. I don't play it with Christians. I don't play it with Muslims. I don't play it with Hindus. I don't play it with Sikhs. And we're going to have genuine equality here and not special rights for anybody. That went longer than I thought. Take a break, and then when we come back, Donald Trump said an absolutely absurd thing in an interview, and you don't want to miss it.
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? The mob with assassin with the roughneck business. I float like gravity, never had a cavity. Got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to put our 20 years to gain some type of fame. No shame in my game, cause I always be the same. Styles upon styles upon styles is what I have. You wanted to survive, but you still don't know the half. I put no balance speaking to avoid an arrow path. Messing my way just to get the size of the I never have stuff, cause I'm not a half stepper. Pick a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper. Refuse to compete with BS competition. Your name is special, so won't you tackle with the mission? I never walk the streets, think it's all about me. Even though deep in my heart, it really gets beat. I just try my best to like go all out. Somebody can tell you, show you like you're bugging out.
Of that creation, mind gets flooded, ejaculation, right on the 2-inch tape, the abstract forward incognito, runs the cake, not the best, not the worst, and occasionally I'm good to get my point across, so bust the floor as I go in between, the grit and the dirt, listen to the mission, listen, missions I do work on, as a crack, the monotone, filling up the dance, so get your own, smoking all of these, cause they try to dupe me, or the best of the back, but they can't do me for an abstract. Original, you can't get your own, and that's pitiful. I know I'd be the man if I cold yanked the plug or RSV, but I can't, and that's wrong.
About Donald Trump. He said something silly like, I love the Bible. The Bible's a good book. Any topic, man, you know exactly what he'd say. My opponent doesn't love the Bible. Sad. Sad. bad. It's always like simple, punchy words. But hey, it actually, you know, in terms of political strategy, actually works. All right, here we go. Let's set this up for you. Trump sat down for an interview with the Washington Post, and he made one of his most ridiculous claims yet. So let me tell you what he said, and then I'll explain why it's so absurd. They report here, the Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump said in a wide-ranging interview with the Washington Post that he'd be able to get rid of the more than $19 trillion in debt over a period of 8 years. That's a quote, over a period of 8 years. That could require using $2 trillion a year from the annual $4 trillion budget to pay off holders of the debt. All right, so I need everybody to understand that that is not only improbable, it's more like impossible. You just can't do it. So when people talk about balancing the budget, which is something sometimes you'll hear from right-wing politicians, even from some liberals who say, oh, okay, we're trying to balance the budget. They're not talking about eliminating the national debt. They're talking about eliminating the annual deficit, which is the yearly deficit that we have. The national debt has been accumulated since the founding of the fucking country. To get rid of that is not a thing. Like, that's not, like, an option. Like, oh, let's $19 trillion? $19 trillion. Okay, let's try to do that. So many people don't know this, but you actually need a national debt. Because as a general rule, public debt, which is what the annual deficit and the national debt are, that equals private surplus. So I have this phrase that I like to use when I talk about it, which is that public debt is actually the lifeblood of capitalism. So when you have the government spending and you have public debt, that's going somewhere. Oftentimes it goes into the private sector. When it goes into the private sector, you have more job creation and you have an economy that's doing better. This is, you know, Keynesianism 101, especially when there's a downturn in, you know, whenever there's a recession or a depression, the idea is the government is the spender of last resort, and then they pump capital into the economy. And then, you know, there's hopefully a recovery. And this is what we've seen from the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession when we did the stimulus package. You know, this is something that we've seen that's actually helped. And furthermore, that $19 trillion number is totally misleading because you have to look at what's a more accurate measure of the place we're at is looking at the national debt as a percentage of GDP. So today in the U.S., it's about 100%. And to put that into perspective for you, because some people are like, oh my God, the debt's the worst it's ever been. It's so bad. We're all going to die. After World War II, it was 113% of GDP. So the debt now is less than it was in 1945. And to put that in perspective, the debt today in Japan, for example, modern nation, over 200%. People who are, you know, right-wing economically, who've looked at Japan and they've been like, any day now there's going to be a debt crisis, any day now. But they've been saying that for over a fucking decade. So it's just, he has no clue how the economy works. Look, if he were to come out and say, I'm going to eliminate the annual deficit, I think that's a pretty reasonable position. In fact, Obama's kind of moved in that direction. He inherited a $1.4 trillion annual deficit, and he cut that to about $480 billion. So, you know, that's one of the goals of many things that he worked on, and he got close to it. So that's a reasonable thing. If he came out and said, I want to balance the annual budget and eliminate the deficit, that's fine. But when he says something like, I want to get rid of the national debt, that's not a thing. Like, that's not – nobody does that. Nobody says that because you can't do it because it doesn't make sense to do it. And furthermore, if you tried to do it, let's say he took $2 trillion out of the federal budget every year and put it towards that, there would be a recession or even worse, a depression of the likes we've never seen. It would be worse than the Great Depression. Because take fully cutting half of government spending and just putting it to pay down the national debt, you would have to get rid of the entire military, which is something I'm not even in favor of, as much as I want to cut military spending, and I cut it by like 50%. But you'd have to either get rid of the entire military or get rid of all of the, you know, social spending and anti-poverty programs. So you can't do it. You just can't do it. It's not a thing. It's not a position. It's not something an adult would say. There are economists all across the world that fucking facepalm when they hear somebody say something so profoundly ignorant. We're going to get rid of the $19 trillion in debt. If anything, and you mean the annual deficit, fine. And I might even agree with you on that. But if you say the national debt, you're just an ignorant prick. He has no clue. He has no fucking clue how the economy works, man. He just doesn't have a clue. He just doesn't have a clue. Okay. Let's go to some pro-marijuana activists and how they got high in front of the White House. What a great story this is. Pro-marijuana activists got high in front of the White House in the most badass protest ever. Huffington Post reports here. The mass protest led by DCMJ, a D.C.-based marijuana group, called for President Obama to take marijuana off the list of Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act. The federal government classification given to the most dangerous drugs lumps marijuana in with more serious drugs like bath salts, allowing it to be prosecuted aggressively. At around 4:20 p.m. Eastern Time, for obvious reasons, they say, which was chosen because of the number 420's association with weed, the protesters lit their joints, fired up their bowls, and pulled on their vaporizers in unison with little disruption from the Secret Service or the local police. They even inflated a 51-foot plastic inflatable joint with the message, "Obama, deschedule cannabis now." That was made by artists especially for the occasion. Okay, so this is a great protest. And my takeaway from the story is actually the fact that there wasn't a crackdown from police officers or the Secret Service proves the point of the protesters. Because if something should really be against the law, and we all agree it should be against the law, you can't do it in front of the White House. So if there was some weird group for religious reasons, they want to do human sacrifice, and they're like, so we're just going to do a human sacrifice in front of the White House. If you do that, the cops will be on you in 3 seconds, the Secret Service will be on you in 3 seconds, and you'll be in jail, as you should be, and there's not a jury in the country that would let you off. Yeah, we're scheduling a murder off in front of the White House. This is what we do. This is what we believe. So we got 7 kids here. We're just going to murder them, slit their throats right in front of the White House. Okay, that should be against the law. We all agree it should be against the law for clear reasons. So if you do that, you're done. We're going to lock you up. But when you get a bunch of people there and they're like, okay, let's smoke some weed, there's a choice to be made by the authorities. Hey, technically that's against the law, but should we do anything about it? And I'm not sure who made the decision. Maybe it was Obama. Maybe it was somebody in the White House. Maybe it was local authorities or whatever. But they were like, whatever, just let it happen. We'll let it slide, and then, you know, we'll move along, and if there's any other disturbances, we'll do what we have to do. But they let it happen. So you want to know why they let it happen? Well, one of the reasons is it's really not that big a deal. You know, imagine there's a protest. We've been so persecuted for so long, we're all going to sip a Monster Energy drink in front of the White House. People be like, what? That's fine. Who gives a shit? Drink your Monster Energy. Nobody cares. Well, that's a drug, and we've spoken about it on the show. There are instances where people drink too much of that stuff, and they have fucking heart attacks. It's a massive upper. It's a stimulant. It's a drug. But, you know, the mindset is, well, it's legal. It's fucking marketed. It comes in a can with bright colors and fucking some nutritional facts on it. So, yeah, go right ahead. Agreed. Go right ahead. Who gives a shit? It should be the exact same for marijuana. It should be the same for all drugs. You know, don't get me wrong. Legalize, tax, and regulate is my plan and my idea. So would drugs exist in the same way that they exist right now if we did that? No. Bath salts wouldn't make you become Face Ripper Monkey. You know, crystal meth would not be allowed in its current form because there are things in there which actually are genuinely harmful and make your fucking skin melt off, and there's all these problems associated with it. So instead, we legalize, tax, and regulate, and whatever drugs are available will be safe. You'll get the high that you're looking for, but it's going to be safe, or at least safer. I would do the same thing with cigarettes. I'd allow cigarettes, but you take out the worst additives that are the most carcinogenic and minimize the risk. Minimize? Is that a word? Minimize the risk? And then let people do whatever they want to do. It should be the same for all the drugs. And 58% of the American people agree that we should legalize weed. What are we waiting for? And it's funny that they did this soon after Obama released more people. He commuted sentences, he pardoned sentences for more nonviolent drug offenders that were in jail. Now it's over 200 people that he's done it for. What are we waiting for? I've let out all the nonviolent drug offenders. I changed the schedule right now away from Schedule 1, which he can do without Congress. I do everything I can without Congress, and I do everything I can with Congress, and I would use the bully pulpit. I'd run ads. I'd be out there on the Sunday shows talking about this issue. I'd tell people on TV, go call your congressman, if he's a Republican, and say, why are you against what 58% of the American people are in favor of? Why are you a fascist? Why are you a tyrant? Why do you want to override the will of the American people? Because 58% want to legalize weed, so what are we waiting for? We know what the right thing to do is. So we have a president now that's, you know, mildly tolerates and does some mini steps in the right direction of marijuana. But all it takes, guys, is a president who doesn't agree with that, and it's over. See, people don't get it, but the federal laws have it so that marijuana is illegal. That overrides all of the state laws. That's the way our system is set up, the supremacy clause of the Constitution. Federal laws override state laws. So all it takes is one dickhead Republican president to say, shut down everything in Colorado, shut down everything in Washington, shut down all the medical marijuana places. No more marijuana in America. End. That's it. It's over. And then it's game, set, match on this whole thing we're doing here. So we got to push. We got to push hard. And we got to make it so that the laws get better. Because we know what the right thing is. We know what the end result is. And we're just moving there ever so slowly. It's time to put it into hyperdrive. Okay, now, let's stick with this issue of criminal justice, and there's a lot to say about this. Hold on one sec, I got to jot something down here. Okay. Think Progress is reporting on an incredible story about the criminal justice system in Louisiana. They say a New Orleans man could spend the rest of his life in jail after allegedly shoving $31 worth of candy bars into his pockets at a Dollar General store. The man is being charged by prosecutors under the state's habitual offender law. The guy's name who they have is Grimes here. Mr. Grimes has 5 prior convictions for theft. All of Grimes' convictions involve thefts of less than $500. His last conviction was for stealing some socks and trousers. Grimes appeared in court last week, pled not guilty. He faces a potential sentence of 20 years to life. He has already spent 9 years in jail for previous convictions. Okay, so why so harsh? Well, they go on and they explain here, Louisiana's habitual offender law has been in place for 30 years. The result has been that sentences of several decades or even life for nonviolent crimes are not unusual in Louisiana. In other states, individuals convicted of similar crimes would have received a much shorter sentence or no jail time at all. Grimes' case is an example of how Louisiana became the world's prison capital. A 2012 expose found that the state imprisons more of its citizens than any other states, and its incarceration rate is nearly 5 times Iran's, 13 times China's, and 20 times Germany's. A major factor driving Louisiana's massive inmate population is money. Each prisoner costs Louisiana an average of $18,800 per year. Sending Grimes to prison for 20 years would cost the state around $376,000. A majority of Louisiana inmates are housed in for-profit facilities, which must be supplied with a constant influx of human beings, or a $182 million industry will go bankrupt. Ah, so there's the cancer in the system. Guys, when you have a for-profit prison system, you know how that works, right? You just incentivized more people to be locked up. Because if it's a for-profit system, they have to make profit. It is private. If you don't make profit, you go bye-bye. So what happens? Well, in this massively corrupt system we have, the for-profit prison industry, they have lobbyists that go to the politicians, they pay the politicians campaign contributions, and they're doing that expecting something in return. namely more laws that can lock people up so that they can lock people up and make more money. And the vicious cycle goes round and round and round and round and round, and next thing you know, Louisiana has way more people locked up than fucking Iran. In the U.S., we have more people locked up than Stalin did in his gulags at their height. And Louisiana is the worst state of all of them. And they're locking people up. Hey, you stole a bunch of candy bars? Perhaps life in prison. Now, I get it. There were previous things that this guy did of a similar nature. Well, the reason why he might be in jail for life now is because of these laws, which have been lobbied for by the private prison industry. The three strike laws, which were becoming more and more common because of the private prison industry. Why do you think they're on the books? That's not a thing. Like, nobody ever said, well, maybe if they do three really minor crimes. So let's imagine you steal a couple candy bars three times. Is that something you should be locked up for life for? Well, the private prison industry says yes. So they get the different state legislatures to pass laws that say, yeah, lock them up for life if they do three minor things. Okay, well, that's how they make more money. That's how we've made it so that it's for profit and people can get rich off of locking other people up, which is obviously going to incentivize making more things illegal to lock more people up. It's incredibly nefarious, and it's an open conspiracy. That's the thing. Like, it's not, hey, behind closed doors and they're hiding it in a smoke-filled back room. It's in your face. You see the nature of the system. You see the dynamics. You see what has to happen. And that's where we're at right now. Now, furthermore, I need you to do a comparison here, and this is something Bernie Sanders talks about all the time. Compare this to Wall Street. On Wall Street, we literally had fraud as a business model. At Goldman Sachs, we had fraud as a business model. They would package together these toxic subprime mortgage loans, and then they'd sell them to unsuspecting clients, telling them they were going to get rich off them, and then they turn around and bet on the same packages they just sold as awesome to fail. They're like, this thing is going to tank. All right, bet against it, bet against it, bet against it. So they made money lying about a product, and then they bet on the product to fail. That's fraud 101. Like, that's the most obvious example of fraud ever. This was a business model on Wall Street. So they do that. They also sell these predatory mortgages in the first place, which were to make money in the short term, and it blew up the system in the long term. And nobody goes to jail. Nobody goes to jail. If you steal some candy bars, perhaps you go to jail for life. If you make it so that 80,000 people lose their house because of a predatory mortgage, you're in the Hamptons on a beach right now. So there are two different justice systems. One for poor people, and more often than not, poor minorities, and the other for super, super rich people. This is the reality of the system. All right, let's take a break here, and then when I come back, here's what I got for you. An anti-Muslim hate group planned an armed protest, and it did not go as they expected. So there's quite a story behind that one, and I have an interesting take on it. I like how I called my own take interesting. Like, no shit, it's what I'm saying. And then recently we had a horrific terror attack in Lahore, Pakistan. And there's an underlying issue there that really needs to be discussed that I'm not sure many people are aware of it. I wasn't aware of it. Now I'm aware of it. And now you see, I think, one of the biggest things that can breed radicalization here. There's a bunch of stuff that can go into radicalization, but the one that I'm going to tell you, I think, is the core issue, because it's so easy to get kids to believe things that are honestly just absurd. But if you tell people from when they're young, there's a good chance they'll believe it. So we got that. And then a little bit later on in the show, I think we'll have time for it, but we'll see. A weird sex scandal in Alabama. This has been going on for a while now, but I'm finally going to maybe get around to talking about it today. A Family Values Republican shockingly caught having an affair. It's a first, man. Usually when Republicans say they're in favor of family values, gosh golly, are they in favor of family values. They're usually not the ones who are fucking around. Psych. I just said psych. That's the first time anybody said psych since 1999. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be back with that and much more.
Yeah.
be ready, cause it's gonna be a real long time I'll be around. To make way through the crowd, swimming through a sea of people, hope I don't drown. Just trying to make way through the town. When my shit drop, bitch, turn it up loud. And turn the money niggas out, I'm the youngest nigga reppin'. Every time I'm stepping out, and every step I start to face, you pop a fight up at your house. Niggas think because we conscious, we don't really get it poppin'. They forgot we from the bottom, they forgot we had to fight for every nickel, every dollar.
An anti-Muslim hate group planned an armed protest at a black mosque in Texas, but it didn't really go as they planned. So Raw Story reports here. The group, the Bureau of American Islamic Relations, or BAIR, has made it a habit in the past to show up at mosques with firearms and intimidate worshippers. In November, armed protesters stalked Muslims in Irving. In December, they again stalked Muslims at the Islamic Association of North Texas. But on Saturday, the group that makes a show of carrying guns while they surround places of worship was met in kind at a Nation of Islam mosque in South Dallas. Quote, "This is an armed defense maneuver making sure that our communities are safe and secure from any insurgents coming in," Crystal Muhammad of the New Black Panther Party told Fox 4. Muhammad was armed with a large shotgun. We won't allow anybody to come in and try to intimidate our brothers and sisters. All right, so what happened here is you had people who are anti-Muslim protesters show up. They were armed. Then you had people, black Muslims from the Nation of Islam, show up. They also had guns. And thankfully, you had the armed anti-Muslim protesters turn and go away. Two thoughts on this. One is, well, it's funny when you give these armed protesters a taste of their own medicine, what happens? Like, oh, really? You have guns? Oh, I got one too. Isn't that interesting? They're like, yeah, all right, let's get out of here. Credit to them, actually, for doing that. But the second thought is, let's not have any of you bring guns. I'm not somebody who's against people owning guns. I've spoken about it before. I call myself a moderate on the issue of gun rights. I mean, I'm in favor of universal background checks. I'm in favor of banning high-capacity magazines and banning certain kinds of guns and setting up a process to make it more difficult to get a gun, yada, yada. But I'm not against people owning guns. But let's not have open carry. I don't know the laws in this particular place of Texas. I'd imagine there is some sort of open carry law because both of them were open carrying and apparently, you know, it wasn't something that's totally against the law. But let's remember here, the Bureau of American Islamic Relations is not the same as CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a Muslim civil rights group. This is the Bureau of American Islamic Relations is an anti-Muslim hate group. But also the New Black Panther Party is a hate group as well, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. So you have one hate group with weapons and another hate group with weapons. How about the solution is no hate groups with no weapons? How about none of you can bring weapons? People might act like, oh, that's a crazy regulation. You're coming for our guns. Really? To not carry fucking guns open outside? Like, in the open, in public, you carrying guns. That's, like, the most basic regulation ever. It's like, hey, let's not be, like, the Wild Wild West. But apparently not, you know, and here's the point. There is going to come a time where a protest like this and a clash like this does turn violent. And then we have warring factions in the streets of America. It's already bad enough with our mass shootings every 12 seconds where 80 people die every single day as a result of gun violence. You know, between homicides, suicides, accidents, mass shootings, 80 people a day. That's bad enough. But now we're going to have warring factions in the streets of America where, hey, we have sides. In this town, there are sides, the anti-Muslim people and the Muslims. And we're going to have wars here. Oh, no, 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 no. Reel it in. Pump your brakes. This doesn't end well. So I want everybody to put down their guns. I'm 100% in favor. Look, I may not agree with these anti-Muslim protesters who want to protest random Muslims that are not tied to jihad or radical actions in any way. You have a right to protest and have your voice heard, free expression, free speech. You can say whatever you want, no matter how hateful it is. That cuts both ways, though. So they can say hateful things. They can say those kinds of things also. But I just don't want any of you armed because it's gonna turn bad. Something's going to go wrong. And this time it didn't, but I don't want to risk it anymore, man. So it's not too much to ask for to say no open carry. And hopefully that'll make it so that you de-escalate the tensions a little bit. But there are some root causes here that would need to be discussed as well. Obviously, there's a growing sentiment in the U.S. of anti-Muslim bigotry, which is real and coming from the far right. Okay, that needs to be discussed. And it also needs to be discussed, the rise in Muslim fundamentalism around the world, the rise in literalism. Both things are a problem, and both need to be addressed. But let's not address it in the street with guns. That's a bad idea. Okay, now let's move on to an update on the terror attack in Lahore and tell you a new angle to the problem that I honestly think is the bulk of the problem. So recently, we had a horrific terror attack in Lahore, Pakistan. Women and children were targeted because the Taliban thought that they were Christian. It actually turns out that many of them were not Christian. They were Muslim as well. But Business Insider here has an eye-opening article on this. So they say the following. The toxic religious atmosphere in Pakistan can't be entirely blamed on jihadis on the periphery of society or on the system of religious madrasas. In recent years, in government-approved schools, students are using textbooks that teach hostility towards all forms of thought and expression except Orthodox Sunni Islam. Okay, so understand exactly what they're saying here. It's not just the jihadis. It's not just the Islamic madrasas. It's not just the far right. Now, as a result of the school curriculum, in the mainstream, they're trying to push Orthodox Sunni Islam, fundamentalism in the mainstream, in the government schools. Okay, so here's what they learn. Quote, the books claim that Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Sikh faiths, and even minority Muslim ethnic groups are inferior, if not dangerous, and should be opposed. They often present stereotyped images from history. The Crusades in the Middle Ages, unjust colonial British civil servants, Jewish moneylenders, or of marauding Sikh warriors, as if these are current affairs and represent popular views in the West and India today. The texts also adopt fundamentalist arguments that Muslim individuals are responsible for taking independent action against those who are not virtuous. Relations with Jews are presented in a seventh grade text in this way, quote, some Jewish tribes also lived in Arabia. They lent money to workers and peasants on high rates of interest and usurped their earnings. Sixth graders are also taught the following. Christians and Europeans were not happy to see Muslims flourishing. Jesus Christ sanctioned war against Muslims. By 10th grade, students learn not just that jihad is a form of internal struggle for the faithful, but that in Islam, jihad is very important. The person who offers his life never dies. All prayers nurture one's passion for jihad. All right, now are you ready for the damning fact in this story that I think is unbelievably telling? There was a spokesperson for the Pakistani Taliban who came out and he gave the announcement as to why they did what they did here in Lahore, targeting women and children because they thought they're Christian. They're like, yeah, no, we're going after Christians. We're targeting Christians simply because they're Christian. That guy went to one of these public schools. So this isn't just, you know, hey, he was within the Taliban growing up. He was in that environment, which was super extremist and super toxic and super fundamentalist. This isn't even he went to, you know, madrasas, which are religious education, which are even more extreme than the public schools. In there, you learn this stuff. No. This is horrible. And what's so telling is the victim narrative. This happens all the time throughout history, always. Whenever right-wingers take control, they will run with the dominant group in the region is the victim. And therefore, anything is justified against the people who are oppressing you. Again, even though you happen to be the majority in said place. This happens all the time throughout history. In fucking Nazi Germany, you had Hitler talk about how the Versailles Treaty fucked Germans, which is actually partly true. It did, right? So they're a part of their oppression. There was a part of it that's actually true. So you take that grain of truth and then you extrapolate it and you go further and you go further and you go further. We're so oppressed. We're such victims. We're victims because the goddamn Jew moneylenders are the ones who put us in this position, and now they're holding us and trying to take all of our earnings, and your hard work is going straight into the goddamn Jews' pocket. It's the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. Oh my God, we're so oppressed. We're so victimized. We're going to have to kill you and shove you into gas chambers because we're so oppressed. But look what you just did there. You flipped it. I'm so victimized, I'm so oppressed that I will now be the victimizer and the oppressor. That's exactly what's happening in these schools. They're presenting the fucking crusades and super violent, marauding Christians as like, that's what they're like right now, today. They're presenting it as if it's like all Americans, all people in the West, all Christians, all Jews, all Sikhs, all Ahmadi Muslims. They're all bad. They're all against you. The fundamentalist Sunnis, you're the ones who are totally oppressed, and you've been given no chance. You've been given no shot. And God, what are you going to do? They leave you no choice. They leave you no choice but to perhaps try to target women and children who are Christians in a park on Easter. You guys have to realize something here. There are so many different pathways and avenues to radicalization of all different forms, okay? And depending on what region, different things can lead you in that direction. So oftentimes we talk about the link between U.S. foreign policy and Western imperialism and how that oftentimes pushes people more into the arms of fundamentalists and they become radicalized. We've spoken about pure religious indoctrination and how that leads to becoming a fundamentalist and then eventually doing terrorism. So there's many different ways to reach that conclusion. But I think one of the ones that is one of the easiest to defeat, but also has the potential to be the most widespread, is when the schools are corrupted, when the mainstream schools become super fundamentalist. Because then you're just breeding an entire generation of people who are going to hate the other, be super bigoted, and in their mind, that bigotry is just a duh. And that's a scary situation. When if you talk to somebody who went to normal public schools in a place like Pakistan, and the deep bigotry and intolerance of everybody that's not like them is just a, of course. Obviously, we're the good people by definition, and they're the bad people by definition. Jews, Christians, Americans, Westerners, Sikhs, Hindus, whatever. Duh, we're obviously the good guys, no matter what. So no matter what we do is justified. That kind of tribalism, that kind of bigotry, that kind of intolerance is a huge problem everywhere. But to see how mainstream it's become in Pakistan in these schools is gut-wrenching because it shows you that moving forward, you know, you're breeding a generation of radicals and a generation of fundamentalists that don't even know they're fundamentalists. So there are consequences to that. There's going to be more terrorism. There's going to be more bloodshed. You have to change the schools. The schools have to be secular. They have to be teaching enlightenment values. And most importantly, and perhaps the best way to sum it up is, they have to teach facts. Just teach facts. Don't censor anything. There's good stuff about the West. There's bad stuff about the West. Teach both. There's good stuff about Christians, bad stuff about Christians. Teach both. Certainly don't teach only the negative stuff about them, only the stuff that we think is good about us, because then there is going to be more terrorism, and the schools are going to be at least partly to blame for it. Okay. Okay, let's go to Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey. I feel like we have a story on him every single day now, which is not something I want to talk about. I think this guy is one of the dumbest people on the planet, but what are you going to do? Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, visited the U.S. last week, and of course he had to get his panties in a bunch over something. So Huffington Post reports here, he accused Obama of going behind his back, like we're high school girls here, for criticizing Turkey's press freedom record and linked it to efforts to divide Turkey. Obama said on Friday after meeting Erdogan on the sidelines of a nuclear summit in Washington that he was troubled by curbs on the press in Turkey and said he had urged Erdogan not to repress democratic debate in his country. Turkey has drawn international condemnation for charging two journalists with treason for publishing footage that purportedly showed the intelligence agency shipping truckloads of weapons to opposition fighters in Syria in early 2014. Ken Dunbar and Erdem Gul of Cumhuriyet face life in prison. Here's what Erdogan said. I was saddened to hear that statement made behind my back. You cannot consider insults and threats press freedom or criticism. Yeah, you can. Let's continue here. They say, Erdogan said Turkey had seized control of opposition newspapers and TV channels, and cut the satellite feed of a pro-Kurdish channel, accusing them of terrorism-related activities. Erdogan has personally brought more than 1,800 criminal suits against individuals, including journalists and children, for insulting him since becoming president in 2014. Okay, this comes back to my primary thesis on Erdogan. He's too stupid to even get the concept of freedom of speech and freedom of the press and free expression. He's so dense, it doesn't even register with him. The idea that, like, no, free expression includes people insulting you, includes people saying things that you don't like about you, includes people telling stories that portray you in a negative way, all that is included under freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Genuinely, like, well, no, insults don't count, right? Of course they do. If insults didn't count for free expression, do you have any idea how quickly I would have been locked up in secular talk history? I think in one form or another, we've been around since 2008. That's when we launched the YouTube channel and stuff. I think in 08, I would have been arrested. everybody should be able to criticize the people in power. You should be able to criticize whoever you want. You should be able to insult them. No shit. The only thing you can't do is direct threats of violence. Okay, nobody ever did that to him. And 1,800 people, he's like, I'm arresting you for insulting me. Well, then we know how big of a joke you are. And in some cases, all people did is they said, hey, we have video of you shipping weapons and supplies to al-Nusra in Syria. And they're like, I will lock you up now for that. Wait, but he's just exposing how you are arming al-Qaeda. Al-Nusra is al-Qaeda in Syria. So you're arming al-Qaeda. They're talking about it. And you're like, now I will lock you up for terrorism-related activities. You're the one that's doing the terrorism-related activities! Are you that stupid? Of course he's that stupid. He hates Assad that much. He hates Shias that much. He's invested in the rebel side in Turkey, in Syria. And he doesn't care who he arms as long as they're rebels. If it's al-Nusra, by all means. Maybe some of those weapons go into the hands of ISIS, by all means. The West has done similar things, too, where we arm Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia arms ISIS, funds different groups that are doing jihad in the region. This is not okay. And when Obama says, you should probably look into that press freedom thing, he's like, how dare you? How dare you, bitch? And he thinks he's such a macho man. He's literally arresting kids. There was a kid who pulled down an Erdogan poster. He got locked up. A guy compared him to a Lord of the Rings character, Gollum, on Facebook. Locked up. You're a little bitch, Tayyip. You're a little bitch. And you don't even get it. You're too stupid to even wrap your mind around the concept of free speech and free expression. Your feelings are irrelevant, okay? People can say whatever the fuck they want to say, and if you disagree with it, you can take a hike. The authoritarianism is real in Turkey, that's for sure. All right, I got two more left in 10 minutes. Perhaps we finish a wee bit early. My stomach is growling. I haven't eaten anything yet today. So that will be occurring as soon as we're all fair here. So recently, there was an environmental catastrophe in Southern California with a persistent gas leak. I'm sure you guys remember the story. When you look at it through a certain camera, I think it was an infrared camera, you could see the gas leak going out into the atmosphere in Southern California, and it looked like it was just this massive disaster. Some people were saying it's the worst environmental disaster since the BP oil spill. So that shows you the extent of the damage. And one of the scariest things is you couldn't see it. You couldn't see it with the naked eye, but they had to evacuate towns that were near the gas leak. So that shows you how dangerous this is. So Raw Story reports here on some developments in that story. In the wake of the enormous gas leak at Southern California gas company Aliso Canyon facility, located in the upscale Los Angeles neighborhood of Porter Ranch, the head of parent company Sempra is still receiving a massive bonus and only a minimal pay cut. As reported by the Los Angeles Times, Sempra's board cut CEO Deborah Reed's pay by $130,000 while awarding her a bonus of $3.17 million. It brings her total compensation for 2015 to, you ready for this, $16.1 million. Okay, I'm going to make this as simple as possible. You get a bonus, and if you get $16.1 million for what happened at this company and with this plant, is there any such thing as corporate accountability anymore? Is there such thing as we're going to have to fire you, we're going to have to let you go, we're going to have to cut your pay more than that? Is there any corporate accountability anymore? This was the worst environmental disaster since the BP oil spill. You had to evacuate towns nearby. They're like, nope, we're going to pay her $16.1 million. Well, motherfucker. So think about it, man. You know what this reminded me of? Wall Street after the crash in 2008. Because what happened? The government rushed in, bailed out these assholes who bankrupted their companies and crashed the economy along with it. The government rushes in, gives them taxpayer money, middle-class taxpayer money, and no strings attached. They can do whatever the fuck they want. And then the companies turned around and paid bonuses to the same people that made the decisions that crashed the company. Well, again, is there any such thing as corporate accountability anymore? But see, this is not even capitalism. That's the point. This is corporatism. Capitalism is, hey, competition, may the best company win. We made a better product at a lower price. We got more of the business. You went out of business. That's rugged individualistic capitalism. The system we have now, especially when you look at Wall Street, is we're going to subsidize and use socialism for the corporations, so corporatism. So pay the rich no matter what. The elite and the donor class get money no matter what. And everybody else, you're a fucksville. If you live in Porter Ranch, sorry, we're going to have to ship you out. If you're a lower worker at that company, sorry, we're probably going to have to fire you. If you're a CEO and you oversee one of the biggest environmental disasters ever, well, maybe we'll cut your pay a little bit, but we'll give you a bonus that's nice, and you'll still make $16.1 million. So apparently there's nothing you could do. If you're part of the club, if you're elite, if you're in that circle, nothing you can do is bad enough. You get paid no matter what. Even if you tank the world economy and you bankrupt your company, the government rushes in and saves you because you paid them bribes. So hey, if you're in that club, congratulations. You literally can't fail. You'll make money no matter what. The only downside to that is we all see the game that's being played, and we hate every single one of you because the system is rigged, and it's rigged in your favor, and oftentimes you're so dense you don't even know it. Okay. Now let me get into the final story here, which is the weird sex scandal coming out of Alabama. Every time I talk about Alabama, I think of South Park's Alabama Man. Alabama Man! You guys got to check that out if you haven't. Go to YouTube right now. Check that out. So recently there was a weird sex scandal in Alabama. Governor Robert Bentley was caught having an affair with his top political aide. Well, now he's on the chopping block. So Time Magazine reports here, Representative Ed Henry said Wednesday that he will introduce the resolution to impeach the governor when the Alabama legislature returns from spring break next week. Henry made his plans public the same day Bentley's top aide resigned amid the fallout of the governor's admission that he made inappropriate remarks to her. Okay, so it's basically the governor on tape saying to this woman, oh, close the door if we're going to do what we did last time. I want to make love to you. I want to hold you from the back and blah, 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 blah. It was somewhat dirty, but really not that dirty. I'd give it a 4 out of 10 in terms of the dirtiness scale. Like I said, he's having an affair. If I'm not mistaken, I think he and his wife had divorced after this. But now he's under fire, and now it looks like he's going to get impeached over this. Now, on the one hand, we're talking about a family values Republican here. So family values, my ass cheeks. This is what happens all the time. Usually you have family values Republicans or anti-gay Republicans who are like, I'm totally not for gay marriage because the sanctity of marriage is important. And then they get caught being blown by some dude in a New Jersey Turnpike bathroom. Like, oh, sanctity of marriage applies to everybody except me. They're just such hypocrites. And this guy's a hypocrite, too. He's talking about family values. He's boinking his top aide. So, yeah, massive hypocrite. But I've been flipped on this, though, because once you decided to go for impeachment, I'm now against you. guys, we have to stop being children as a country. Seriously, we're like a bunch of babies, okay? This has no, you know, effect on his job whatsoever. Now, it's a different thing completely if, in the process of his affair, he spent taxpayer money on the affair, and maybe he did, and if that's the case, yeah, impeach him. Or maybe, you know, he also sucks at his job, and he sucks in ways that are against their state constitution or against the federal constitution, or there are grounds for impeachment. If there are genuine grounds for impeachment, go ahead. But if it's just over the affair, I need you to stop being stupid, because we have so many things are worse. It's worse when all the different Republican governors reject the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. Now, maybe he is in that crowd, too. In fact, he probably is. And if that's the case, perhaps you impeach him on that. But, like, that's a bigger thing. There's 17,000 people will die because many Republican governors did not accept the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. Well, you just made a decision. It didn't cost you anything. The federal government pays 100% of the cost for the first 3 years or so, and after that, like 80 or 90% of it. So you, because you're a stubborn prick and you're against Democrats because they're Democrats, you just made it so that people will die in your state because they don't have health care. I care way more about that than what you do with your little tiny piggly wink dick. I don't care about your dick, okay? So why – I don't – understand our priorities. If there's a sex scandal, oh my God, everybody talks about it as the biggest thing ever, but it's not. I don't give a shit. Ted Cruz allegedly, according to a National Enquirer story, fucked five different women, had an affair. Okay, fuck you because you say you're a family values person. But the fact that that gets more coverage than when Ted says, I want to carpet bomb Syria and see if the sand can glow, when carpet bombing, by definition, massacres civilians, that's more important. He's saying he's going to murder people in the highest office in the land and probably the world. And people are like, I don't care what's happening with his penis. I need people to actually get their priorities straight and care about the things that matter to us. Care about when Republicans slash anti-poverty programs, which are necessary to make it so people don't go homeless. Care about, you know, war spending and all this military garbage. The governor's a different story because he's not involved with that. That's obviously something at the federal level. But care about all that stuff to not focus on that and to only focus on we'll only impeach you if something happens with your penis. It just shows that we're a nation of children and we need to grow the fuck up. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. With a great new show for you. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Much love. Kisses, smooches, peace.